What are we made of? Why do I get sick? How can I live a more balanced and whole life? These are just a few of the questions explored each week by naturopath, medical intuitive, and clairvoyant Dr. Rita Louise on Just Energy Radio. Explore your possibilities every Friday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join us at JustEnergyRadio.com.
Shadow governments, strange rituals, new world
shadow
order,
governments, strange
buried treasures, planetary mind control, military cover-ups, corporate
shadow governments, strange rituals, new world order, buried treasures, planetary mind control, corporate
It's a strange world.
Visit OutThereRadio.net for more information.
Interested in ghosts, UFOs? How about the occult? Are you psychic? Would you like to find out? Well, if you're intrigued by the world's curiosities and all that is paranormal, then Paralore.com is a place for you. Create your own profile, start a photo album, write a blog, or just hang out and watch countless hours worth of paranormal videos while chatting with other Paralore members. Who knows? You could win a prize or two if you're quick and brave enough. It's all here, and it's all free. Visit www.paralore.com and join today. Again, membership is free. and we know you won't be disappointed.
Paralore.com. Unlock your mind.
This is Ghostly Talk.
Giorgio A. Tsoukalos has been often described as the real-life Indiana Jones. As a trailblazer, he is changing the way the world thinks about the ancient astronaut theory. For over 10 years, Giorgio A. Tsoukalos has been the director of Eric von Däniken's Center for Ancient Astronaut Research. He is also the publisher of Legendary Times magazine and also the world's only and definitive ancient astronaut research journal. That's what Legendary Times magazine is. What we're going to be talking about tonight, I guess we're going to be focusing around, is the new book by Eric von Däniken called History is Wrong. Am I correct, Giorgio?
Yes, we are, and thank you very much for having me back on the program.
No, it's good to have you back here again. Last time you were on, we had an absolute ball, so I was looking forward to talking to you again. Now, I did a little reading on History is Wrong, but I really would like to kind of just get an idea as von Däniken is, you know, I've been reading his work for years. I love Eric von Däniken. I have all of his books. So when I heard about this new piece of work that was coming out, I was very interested, and I was even more interested to find out that you had a part in this thing, too. So I guess we can start from there. And, I mean, what's going on with this thing? Let's talk about History is Wrong for a second.
Yeah. No, it's actually quite exciting because, as many people know, Eric von Däniken wrote this book called Chariots of the Gods in 1970.
Yeah.
And it was pretty much the definitive book on ancient astronauts, which basically got the whole thing rolling. And in the meantime, you know, Eric has churned down the book almost every 2 years. So right now, this is book number 29.
Mm.
So talk about a prolific career.
Yeah.
And the great thing about this particular book, History is Wrong, is that he actually spills the beans on some stories that he got some flack for 30 years ago. Sure, Scott, you're aware of one book he wrote, Gold of the Gods.
Oh, yes.
And in that book, there's about 10 pages in which he describes that in the 70s, he visited a underground cave system of tunnels in Ecuador. And he was ripped apart for that story, that it was a lie, that it was fraudulent, this and that. However, here we are 35 years later, and he breaks his silence by telling exactly what he experienced 35 years ago, why there was so much controversy. And to make a long story short, Eric von Däniken has been finally vindicated with this book, because not only does he write about it, but in the book he actually reproduces many of the letters and correspondence that he has had with all the people involved back then that, added to the controversy, including, for example, Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon.
Oh.
And what was very interesting is that Neil Armstrong, after Gold of the Gods came out, he was asked to be the head of an expedition on the tracks or on the trail of Eric von Däniken's Gold of the Gods.
Mm-hmm.
And they mounted this expedition, they went there, and they didn't find anything. So what happened is this led to the whole thing that they labeled Eric as a liar, this and that. And so Eric, never at a loss for words, wrote to Neil Armstrong, and he said, why would you say something like this? And in the letter, which is actually reproduced in History is Wrong, Neil Armstrong writes, Dear sir, I have no idea how anyone could have said that you're a liar, because, number one, I was unaware that you went to these caves, and number two, I was never told that this was supposed to be an expedition to prove you wrong. So all those things, you know, and of course, you know, some of these letters have been kept under wraps for many, many years. But because in 2005, 2006, this gentleman by the name of Stanley Hall published a book called Teos Gold. And in that book, he actually gives the longitude and the latitude of those cave systems. And so Eric said, well, now the cat's out of the bag, so you know what? Let me just straighten what happened 35 years ago. And to make a long story short, everything that Eric wrote was 100% correct.
Oh, so, I mean, so more or less off of what's been documented now, I mean, it's given him an opportunity to, I think you said, vindicate himself. It must be a good feeling, first of all, to be able to do that after so many years, correct?
Well, yes, and the thing is, you know, the main point was basically that the quote-unquote original discoverer of these caves or this tunnel system was a gentleman by the name of Juan Moritz. And when Eric went to these caves with this guy, Mr. Moritz asked him, you know, you can write in your book that you went to a side entrance, but please don't give away the exact location and so on and so forth, because, you know, he wanted to prevent that there would be a lightning storm of visitors going, or treasure hunters going to that particular area.
Naturally.
And so Eric basically just on a handshake deal, just, you know, followed through on a promise not to reveal the exact location. And for that, he was labeled as a charlatan and all those things. And it's quite frightening what happens if you actually follow through on your word.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so and all that stuff is right now revealed in History is Wrong. And above all else, it's a great adventure story. I mean, it's a really right out of the pages of Indiana Jones.
Well, you know, it's interesting, this whole idea of concealing a location of a place. And Amber and I were just talking about that earlier today. You mentioned that, Amber, that there was actually some issues. We'll just keep the story high level, but some lady actually sued some people over them documenting a location of her. What was the high level story of that, Amber?
And what one?
Well, the people that
the
were
the one you told me outside.
The one the story about the people who were the lady who did not want to have her the location of her property published.
Oh, and what about that?
Well, she actually sued those people.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason I'm mentioning that, Giorgio, is that, you know, obviously, I can identify with that. First off, you know, we've heard about all types of places. As soon as in the ghost hunting field, that place is haunted. The place just gets pounded by people. Oh, every night, you have people there every night doing something, and things can be damaged. In this case, obviously, your guys' case, things could come up missing, right? They're treasure hunting and stuff like that. So it seems like, you know, Eric did the right thing to say, okay, yeah, I'll follow through my word. We don't want to have a million people piling through here. We found it. Let's do our thing for a little while, and then we can, you know, I don't know how it all would work, but I do definitely identify with that, because all sorts of problems can arise from something like that, unfortunately. But he took a beating for it, though, for doing what he said he was going to do, though, unfortunately.
Oh, big time, yeah, big time beating. And but again, you know, to see, especially with all the documentation that he has now published in his new book, you know, it basically corroborates the story to a T, and there isn't really much that the debunkers can say now, because it's all there. It's black and white. It's corroborated by official documents, written correspondence, you know, the reproductions in the book of this correspondence. And so the case is clear that, you know, it's really not what it was made out to be. And that's pretty, you know, amazing that it's taken 35 years for all of this to finally come out. But you know what? Why not? And, you know, I'm very proud of Eric that he actually, you know, took the stance to set the record straight.
How did you, if I may ask, how did you meet Eric? How did you come into contact with Eric Von Daniken?
Well, when I, you know, grew up, I had the privilege of traveling the planet with my parents, and they made sure that wherever we visited, you know, we'd go to all the ancient archaeological sites, this and that, and we were, you know, we had docents sometimes or guides telling us about this particular site and that particular site, and we went to museums all over the place. But then my grandma, she was always very keen on telling me that, listen, you've just been taught the mainstream idea of this particular culture or this particular, you know, archaeological site, but be aware that there are alternative histories or alternative viewpoints on all these ancient subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And she was actually one of the first ones that introduced me to Erich von Däniken.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, I guess, at the right place at the right time, because part of my life I grew up in Switzerland. And
yeah.
Erich is a Swiss citizen. He writes all of his books in Switzerland still today, lives there. And so I started to... In my early teens, I started to go to some of his lectures, and Erich, still to this day, is very open-minded to a younger generation of basically, you know, handing over the baton and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I started to hang out with his friends, and before you knew it, the predecessor magazine to Legendary Times called Ancient Skies,
mm-hmm.
in 1998 ceased publication, and Erich basically asked me, look, we will continue this magazine in the German language, but we don't have anyone in the English-speaking world, so would you like to do this? And I'm always one for, you know, say, grab the bull by its horns,
mm-hmm.
and we started out, first issue came out at the end of 1998, it had 12 pages, and here we are in 2009, and each Legendary Times magazine has 64 pages minimum.
Oh yeah, and we are on the mailing list for that. It's a fantastic magazine. We always get it. We always enjoy stopping and going through and reading the articles that, you know, whenever we get a new one. So thanks for that, by the way, too.
Hey, no problem. You know, it's shows like this that get the word out and let, you know, the mainstream know that history is wrong. Not everything that we're being taught in school, especially, is necessarily correct.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, and especially if you start digging deeper,
mm-hmm.
because the main thing with the archaeologists is always when they explain a mystery, in 99.9% of the cases, they say that all of the ancient monuments were built in worship of the gods,
mm-hmm.
or this was all done for some sort of a religious or a spiritual purpose. Well, and then they say, case closed, mystery solved, that's it.
Yeah.
But that is exactly where the questioning begins, because who were these gods?
Yeah.
Because if they were just figments of the imagination, invisible stuff, then I don't think that would have been compelling enough for all the sweat and blood that our ancestors toiled in erecting all of these ancient monuments, which were all built in a spectacularly humongous fashion.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can give the obvious example of the Great Pyramid and the pyramids of Giza. I mean, they were ridiculous. We've talked about them millions of times here on the show, and it never gets boring. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
They were monolithic. They were huge. They were gigantic. I mean, and we have all types of conversations about this, you know, on and off the air, you know, about who or what and this whole idea. And as we know, like you just said, there's a cut and dry method of history where it's like, well, it's very easy to explain this, you know, this thing here, it all fits together real nice. And it's like, well, wait a minute. I'm not seeing the whole picture here. There's got to be more to this than just, you know, a simple little explanation you're talking about. There's evidence to suggest that that's the truth also, that there's more to it than just your simplified little fit-it-in-the-box little answer and that's it. So, you know, and that's why there are people out there like yourself and even like us that are asking these questions going, hey, you know, there's more to this, you know, and I guess that's, you know, even why, you know, Eric has done history. History is wrong because, you know, these things need to be figured out. We need to get answers to these things. And I think for the greater of all of us as people, we deserve to know these things and not just be kind of thrown the simple little answer that, you know, I guess people think that that's all we can handle as regular people, I guess. I don't know.
Right. No, absolutely. And the thing is also that, you know, one thing that makes this so interesting is that, you know, what we do especially is we do not shy away from asking the uncomfortable questions.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you have to ask. You can't just, you know, not everything that's presented to you on a silver platter turns out to be correct. And, you know, not to repeat myself, but especially when you start to dig deeper. Because, you know, one thing is crystal clear, that the mythologies, the ancient legends and traditions, they all speak of the same thing, that a long, long time ago, these humanoid-looking beings descended from the sky,
mm-hmm.
and taught mankind in various disciplines. Now, right from the outset of this interview, I would like to tell the audience that the ancient astronaut theory does not propose that any of these beings were in any way, shape, or form divine or, you know, spirit beings or something like that. They were flesh and blood extraterrestrials whom our ancestors misinterpreted to be these higher beings, which they were not. The reason why that happened is because those extraterrestrials arrived in nuts and bolts technology,
mm-hmm.
yet our ancestors misinterpreted that, you know, nuts and bolts technology for something magical in nature, which, of course, it was not.
And I've had this exact same conversation not literally days ago. And it's
mm-hmm.
exactly what I said. I'm like, let's say you're out there wherever you're at and you don't have technology like these people do who come out of the sky. That's the point right there, is that these people come, or these beings, whatever they may have been, come out of the sky. And that's what they look to every day going, wow, you know, there's that big bright thing out there. What's going on out here? You know, and then all of a sudden here comes these ships with beings in them that come out. And yeah, I think it'd be natural for anybody in that era, whatever era it was a long time ago, we know that, to misinterpret that, like you just said, Giorgio, that these were gods.
And the other thing is also, and by the way, gods, always with a lowercase g. It has nothing to do with the god or god, has absolutely nothing to do with that, because I myself am still a very spiritual person, and I believe in some type of a greater force, which some people call God, some people call it the universe, but it was most certainly not what was described, for example, in the Old Testament, that was God. God did not visit us in the form that it was written down in, for example, the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing we have to remind ourselves, and this is where the critics totally get it wrong, the ancient astronaut hypothesis does not suggest that our ancestors were dumb or primitive. They were at the same intellectual level that we have today. They were as smart as we are today. However, there's one huge difference between us today and them thousands of years ago, and that is, that their technological frame of reference was different than what we have today. And therein, that's the mystery right there. Because, imagine you could travel back in time and you could visit Julius Caesar. Now, everyone would agree that Julius Caesar was a highly intelligent man. Now, you and I show up and with a laptop and we, you know, pop in a DVD and we show him the Grand Canyon. Well, after a few hours, we will disappear again and... First of all, Julius Caesar will be totally dumbfounded. And then, if he has the courage, he will go and talk to his contemporaries and say, you don't believe what just happened this afternoon. These beings arrived, they looked very much like me, but they had this magical stone tablet and a silver disc of magic that they were able to, you know, put into the stone, and all of a sudden the stone gave me wisdom because I saw parts of the world that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
That you know, he wouldn't be able to say that was a laptop, that was a computer, and it...
No, because they're not, like you just said, they're not from the same technical frame of reference. It's a totally different scale.
And so what's very interesting is that in ancient lore and in mythologies and in legend and in ancient texts, we have literally dozens of references of these yellow, glowing, magical stone tablets. Now, was it really a, you know, stone tablet? Of course not. It was misunderstood technology. And that is the underlying red thread of the ancient astronaut hypothesis, misunderstood technology.
Why do you think, you'd think, I mean, obviously by looking at hieroglyphs and things like that, when it comes to these ancient astronauts, I'm wondering if there was obviously some type of communication breakdown, or there was a communication barrier between the ancient astronauts and the people of the time. It seems like they would, maybe they were secretive about their technology. I mean, I don't know. But it seems like they may have had some kind of communication with these people. They obviously visited them, and they would have kind of explained maybe to a layman's degree their technology and what they did. But you generally, from what I've seen, and I'm a layman at that, is, you know, you just see drawings of these things. And, you know, obviously the worship things, that they refer to these people as gods in a lot of situations. It seems like they would tell them, hey, you know, this is a computer.
it is the same thing. You know, I'm one to compare ancient stuff to modern stuff. And in the end, to me, it's all logic, because the argument that you've just brought forth is very compelling and very interesting, because look at this today. If we find, and this happens at least once or twice a year, still today, where we come across a native tribe somewhere in South America, in the Amazon, or, you know, on some other continents of the world, where we encounter a native population that so far has never had contact with another civilization or with another society.
Yeah.
So what do we do as ethnologists? Do we just stand back and watch them from afar? Yes, for about 2 to 3 months. But then we make our approach into that society, and within a year, or even less sometimes, we ourselves are able to communicate with each other in their language. And, you know, this also is referred to as a cargo cult phenomenon, where in the 1940s, during the Second World War, when the Americans were in the South Pacific and they built these makeshift airports where they had their planes taking off and land and all of this. And so after the war ended, ethnologists went back to those islands and to just see what happened in those 10 years or in those 5 years that the Americans had left after the war. And it was very interesting what they encountered. And that is, where those old airstrips were, the natives had built planes made out of straw and wood. And every night they would hold these rituals of, you know, these planes taking off and landing, and they had little, you know, walkie-talkies made out of wood and rifles made out of wood.
Oh, my
and
God!
And this is not something that, you know, Eric and I invented. This is a staunch ethnological term called cargo cult. Anyone can go and Google it. You can go and Google images, and you will find pictures of these straw planes.
Yeah.
And so our take on all this is that if something like this can happen in our century, why the heck couldn't this have happened 5,000 or even 10,000 years ago? And the answer to us, of course, is yes, it did happen.
Exactly. Let's take a quick break, Giorgio, because I want to keep talking about this. This is really, really interesting. And this whole you're answering my question. that's what's cool about it. Let's take a quick break, though. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Bonnie.
Amber.
God, more enthusiasm, girls.
And I'm Bonnie.
Amber!
We'll be right back after this.
Okay.
For more info, visit ghostlytalk.com.
This is an EVP. This is an EVP. These were recorded by the Long Island Ghost Hunting Team. Light. To hear more, come listen to Light Paranormal Radio. Go to lightparanormal.com and subscribe to us in iTunes.
No, I heard a woman's voice.
You heard a woman's voice?
Yeah.
What is that?
Sound like hello.
Don't be caught bored waiting for something to go bump in the night. Listen to the Paranormal Broadcast System with Brad, Brandon, Todd, and Paul.
Well, hello, Mr. Fancy Man.
Listen to some great interviews with some amazing guests that run the gamut from ghost hunting groups across the country to paranormal personalities in the media. First, let's be serious for a moment. Then let's have some fun. We've got it all covered. Tune in and listen to intriguing interviews with our hosts from L.A. Spirits and the Louisiana Spectral Research Center. Then kick back and listen to us try to be funny with some crazy Cajuns. And some other guys, too. This is no kids show, folks. It's the Paranormal Broadcast System. Listen to us poke fun at ourselves. It's funnier that way. You can find us at www.lagghosts.com. That's www.lagghost.com.
What? taking this ball, and all I get is the number 8. Where's the snow? I told my psychic I wanted to know if I was going to win the lottery, and she asked me for the numbers. The death card keeps showing up in this deck. Maybe I should get a reflector on my scooter. I keep dreaming about frogs leaping into my bed. This book says I'm just horny. Having a bad day at the Wheel of Fortune? Karma Cast has answers. Check out KARMAKAST.com for show listings and times. KarmaCast.com is a division of Mayhem Media.
Astronauts, we're talking about here, and I'm learning myself. I hope everybody else is learning some very interesting ideas here. You know, and that's really, you know, like I said, Giorgio, I was just having a conversation on this idea of, you know, ancient astronauts coming out of the sky and people from a different technological reference, you know, misinterpreting this thing and making them out to be, you know, gods, where simply they're from a time, or, you know, they're from the same time, obviously, but their technological frame of mind was a bit different than the people that they were visiting. And you're saying that this happens even today. This is going on. The same thing happens today. It's cargo culturing. Is that what you called it?
Yes. Cargo cults is when a technologically more advanced society comes in contact with a technologically less advanced society. And the reason why it is called cargo cult is because when the Americans were there in those islands in the South Pacific, like Vivac and Kiribati and all those places, they gave the natives, you know, chewing gum and corned beef and things like that. And so upon their departure, the natives wanted the Americans to come back in their, you know, giant silver birds and things like this, not knowing that they were planes. And they were very afraid of these planes. And so every night, for example, also, and there's actually pictures of this, they would go and they would slaughter a pig on the bow of one of those, or the front end of some of those planes. A very interesting occurrences happened back then, and that is why we have cargo, because cargo means goods.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where how that name came about.
What got me thinking, the next thing, I mean, I'm going to switch gears here, hopefully not too bad on us, Giorgio, but
There's no such thing.
what has me thinking now is, you know, we're talking about, you know, what we consider ancient races of people on this planet, right? What I'm thinking now, though, is, there's stories on this, there's movies on this stuff. What if us today, us with our cell phones and our computers and our Bluetooths and all these little gadgets we have that are really super high tech, as far as we know, what if we were faced with something like this? I mean, and we've seen films on this, you know, where, you know, what we consider UFOs or aliens visit this planet, right? And I'm wondering if they're from a completely different technological frame of mind. I mean, we may end up being the ones worshiping them, it seems to me. I mean, am I in the right track of my frame of mind here?
Sure, absolutely. And the point you raise is a very interesting one. And in fact, this is an actual field of study by a group of scientists or university professors that call themselves futurologists. And they're sociologists, but they ponder and ruminate about the future. And one main or big question in this whole field of study is, what would happen if something like Independence Day were to happen today? And I don't mean, you know, the Hollywood idea of Independence Day where if the aliens show up, they're, you know, they're here to annihilate us and to eat us for dessert and things like this.
Yeah.
But, you know, more or less contact. And, I mean, contact has happened not just in ancient times. There is a bridge between the ancient times and modern times because, you know, even in the modern UFO field, granted, I'm the first one to say that many of these modern-day UFO reports are fake or very much explainable with, you know, normal explanations.
Mm-hmm.
But if only one UFO sighting turns out to be correct, I mean, that's all that's needed. So it's not even, in my opinion, a debate whether or not UFO reports are real or not. I mean, they obviously are, and something is going on that we just haven't quite figured out what exactly it is.
Yeah.
But, you see, we are taught by mainstream media and also by textbooks and especially also by religion that humankind, we are the greatest, we are the pinnacle of creation, there is nothing greater, nothing bigger, nothing better than us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that is the wrong way of looking at the whole picture, because if, you know, 40 years ago, it was a taboo topic amongst scientists to even address extraterrestrial life. There was only a handful of scientists who actually talked about that. And today, in 2009, you would be hard-pressed to find any scientist that would deny that extraterrestrial life exists, because it's basically a mathematical certainty.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely been a paradigm shift there. However, what is not yet discussed by these scientists, at least not in a public forum, is not only are they out there, but they've been here, not just 10,000 years ago, but they've been here all along, you know, paying us visits and things like that. So I would say that 20, 30 years down the road, what we're talking about right now on this program will be common knowledge and accepted knowledge.
And
now,
go ahead, I'm sorry, Scott.
That went off on a tangent here. That did not answer, as I always do. But this does not. I didn't answer your question. So I think that those, and not just me, but this, I gathered this from these futurologists, from these sociologists, and they 90% have come to the conclusion that if they were to touch down on the White House lawn, that mass panic would ensue, because all of a sudden our worldview would pretty much be turned upside down on its head.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, like I said before, we're taught we're the greatest, we're the pinnacle of creation, this and that, and all of a sudden, you know, there's intelligent extraterrestrials that are, you know, visiting the White House. It would freak people out. It wouldn't freak out you, me, and the rest of the audience, because this is why we're tuning in to a program like this. But we are still in the minority.
Mm.
But the paradigm shift is happening, and, you know, I also think that there is a very specific reason why there are so many Hollywood productions right now, be it on TV and, of course, in the movie theater, that specifically address the extraterrestrial question.
Well, yeah, and the last 10 years there's been a lot of films. I mean, big films. I mean, before, I mean, a lot of these extraterrestrial type films, they were more reserved for the B-rate type films. They were more kind of wild, more low budget. But we're talking large, full scale productions. Independence Day was already mentioned. That was a huge, huge film when it came out. The newest one right now, District 9. We just saw that last weekend, as a matter of fact. Really interesting film, which I thought, you know, I don't want to turn this into like a movie review, but I mean, that film really kind of brought it home, though. A lot of these films we see, like Independence Day, these super, you know, intelligent beings are going to come and just kill us all and take over the planet, whereas these beings in District 9, I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to go any further with that, Giorgio, because if I spoil it, I'm going to get killed by somebody. But the film kind of gives you a different frame of mind, though, and we're seeing more and more of this stuff. So, I mean, do you think it's maybe that the powers that be or people do know that we as a race are going to be faced with this someday, and this is a way for us to prepare for it, do you think?
Well, yeah, but see, District 9 has the reason why I think that this movie is so appealing is, and I don't think I'd be giving too much away by saying that it turns out that we're the bad guys. Now, that is something totally revolutionary in the whole, you know, alien scenario in movies, because, you know, what that movie portrayed was something that, you know, I and Eric and a whole bunch of other ancient astronaut theorists have talked about 15 years ago. That could be that if extraterrestrials show up, you know, them coming here, I think that 99.9% of such a hypothetical case would be in a benevolent venue on their part.
Yeah.
But would we be as benevolent to them? And I think that is one of the main reasons why no official contact has happened so far, because we as a society are way too violent.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's a reason why official contact has not yet happened. And I think that is one of the main points why, that we're just too violent and too dangerous for them.
Yeah, I mean, in my favorite comedian, George Carlin, you know, I hate, but I love the quote George Carlin, but he talks about that in one of his trips he was doing. He's like, you know, we do all this stuff to each other. We're screwing each other every day. We're blowing things up left and right. We're warring all over this planet. We wonder why a ship just doesn't land here and want to meet us.
Right.
We wonder why we haven't had contact with aliens that we're talking about all the time. And that's, you hit the nail right on the head, Giorgio. I think that if these beings, whatever they may be, have the technology to travel across, however far it may be, it's astronomical figures, they're going to be able to observe us and be able to see what's going on here and go, I'm not going to go down. They're going to chop my head off and turn me into an experiment.
And the other question that we seriously have to ask ourselves, have we as a society ever, in all seriousness, attempted to get in contact with a heap of chickens? The answer is no.
No.
We haven't done that yet, okay? And we never will. Okay, chickens, they're not humans, but, you know, right now we're pretty much chickens in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And another very interesting point that one sociologist, and his name actually escapes me, has put forth by reading an article by an astrophysicist. He said that, you know, who knows how advanced their technology is, so that we wouldn't even be able to recognize it. Like, an example I like to give for that sometimes is, let's say, you know, you're out on your patio and you have some patio lights. And at night, those patio lights, you know, they're very beautiful and they shimmer and they're just, you know, great. And then let's say you have a pet, you have a dog or you have a cat, and that cat and that dog sits with you out on the patio, looks up to the sky, and he or she, or the pet sees the patio lights, those string lights. Now, obviously, the cat or the dog sees it, but the cat or dog has no idea what's behind it, that there is electricity, that there is a cable, there's a light bulb, this and that. So the pet might be very enthralled by what they're seeing, but they haven't a clue what's there. So that can be akin to current extraterrestrial technology. For all we know, there could someone be standing in your studio right now.
Oh, yeah. I agree. We have no idea. That's what I was. That really kind of goes back to what I asked before. It's like, well, could the tables be turned on us? We think we know so much now, and that we're so advanced as a race of people on this planet. We have our cell phones and all these.
Well,
cool
this is, and you've just brought up an excellent point, because that is the main argument that is totally futile by modern day scientists by saying, yes, we think intelligent extraterrestrial life is a mathematical certainty, but they could have never come here, or they will never come here, because the distances between the stars are too large. And you know what? Absolutely. The distances are big, and we humankind, we do not yet have the technology with which to bridge those distances.
Yeah.
And thus, they surmise, because we can't do it, they can't do it either. And that is the height of human arrogance.
No, that's horrible. Yeah, I agree.
Because we can't do it, they can't. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, the argument is null and void, because if a society is out there, and they're, let's say they're 10,000 or 100,000 years older than us,
mm-hmm.
I mean, what, their technological advancements are on the same level like ours? No way. They've had hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, more time to develop more technology. And who knows, if they have hybrid technology where all of a sudden you combine biology with technology, the sky is the limit.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, that's assuming also, and I don't mean to throw a monkey wrench in this, but I mean, I'm just, you got me really thinking hard on all this, Giorgio. I mean, that's assuming that a society is, they think along the same lines we do as far as, you know, technology. We always want to be growing and learning and getting better. You know, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it's just an idea. I'm just throwing this out there. I mean,
of course.
We could run into another situation where, if a society maybe doesn't have the same value as we do. Obviously, as a bulk of our population, or, you know, the world here, we do like to move forward. We are always about, you know, learning and getting better and getting faster and more efficient and building better machines and possibly someday bridging those large gaps between other stars, you know, as a race of people or you know, as far as technology is concerned. But I'm wondering if there may be a race of people out there that may not have that ideal. They may just, I mean, you're really getting into sociology there, but I mean, I'm wondering if there could be a possible race of people that don't value that. They just say, no, we more or less just kind of like to chill out here and enjoy ourselves. It sounds goofy,
no, absolutely.
But I mean,
you know, and that's the thing that, you know, obviously, you know, all of the things that we discuss here, you know, applies, who knows, maybe it only applies to an infinitesimal percentage of the whole picture.
Yeah.
Because I liken it that, you know, there is some type of an intergalactic federation out there or something with hundreds, if not thousands of member societies and planets. However, you know, each of those societies has different values. And by the way, just to throw that in there, the whole idea that the day that we, you know, make contact with an extraterrestrial society, that everything will be hunky-dory and we'll be living in a pink world and everything will be love, 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 I mean, I'm sorry, that's baloney as well. Because to think that, you know, the extraterrestrials will come here and they will give us the holy grail of environmental, of saving the environment and things like this, I mean, that's, to me, wishful thinking.
Completely.
Because just like we have, you know, problems on our planet, there's problems out there. So to suggest that, you know, which many people in the New Age field are doing, and I think it's a detriment to the whole field, that they're selling this false hope that, you know, once we make contact, everything will be wonderful and everything will be free brotherly love. I mean, that's all wishful thinking. And it's like, you know what? Yeah, but 99% of the cases, I would think that it'll just be like on planet Earth on a larger scale, which is still beautiful. We live on a fantastic planet. We have great places to go. And, you know, so
you're always going to have your problems. Yeah,
you're
always going to have your problems. And I mean,
of course.
No matter how, you know, we hear every day about, well, we're going to fix this, we're going to fix that, there's always going to be another problem, even if they do fix it, which they usually don't. It'd be very easy for me to believe that if a race of beings come here to visit this planet that have the same ideals and the same, you know, the same structure that we do, that, you know, technology and growing, that they're going to have debate and argument and infighting like we do every day.
Of course, it
wouldn't surprise me that they were just as chaotic, if not, I hate to say it, if not warlike in some ways. I mean, they very well may be. I mean, I don't know, but I will stand by that. I think a lot of that may be the main reason we may have not been visited, though, is because we are too violent of a race of people, like you said, also, Giorgio.
Right. I mean, you know, I would think that the day we will make contact, at least then we will be nice to each other here on planet Earth. Because, you know, if you look at Star Trek or at Star Wars, you have all these different races and these different planets, but they're never really at war on their own home planet. They're at war with other societies.
Yeah.
But we're not even at that level yet. Yeah. We are fighting human against human.
Yeah.
So until that stops, I don't think anything will happen, and therefore, by the way, nothing will happen pertaining to extraterrestrials in 2012.
Oh, boy, that's a whole other show. Why'd you have to lay that out at the end
of the show?
For the next show.
Nice.
Yeah, thanks, Giorgio. Yeah, just lay that out at the very end here. Actually, unfortunately, yeah, we just blew through this like I knew we were going to, Giorgio.
Oh, we'll do it again. This
yeah, we
was a
have
great,
to.
Great time.
Yeah, we have to. Hang on the line for one second. Don't leave us just yet, okay? Hang tight. All right. Wow. End of the show. Flew right through.
I know.
Doug missed a doozy this week.
He actually, yeah.
He did. He did miss
a
doozy.
I think we should beat him for missing it.
Yeah, we should.
I
when do you want to do that? Sometime this week? We'll hook up?
Yeah,
this weekend so I
or
can be involved.
We can do it next Sunday before the show.
Okay, that sounds
good.
We can do that.
Amber, you may have to sit in next week.
Okay.
Got to thank James Willis for earlier.
Oh,
always
God,
great
absolutely.
Talking to James. And looking forward to seeing James at the Mothman Festival next month. Actually, this month. Well, no, next month, because it's still a couple more days left in August. Also, obviously, got to thank Giorgio A. Tsoukalos for joining us again. It was a great time. And we're going to have to definitely do it again, have Giorgio on again. Thank you all. I'm not good at this kind of stuff. This is Doug's part of the show.
I know.
But thank you guys all for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. One real quick thing, too. You know, we were kind of talking earlier about, you know, the show and whatnot a little bit. You know, just for fun, if you got anything going on this weekend, you want to play through email, fire me an email. Tell us how we're doing. I haven't asked for any feedback in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us how we're doing. Tell us what you think of the show. Do you think we need some more of this or some more of that, or should we just put a bullet in our head? You know, you let us know what we should do, and we'll do our best
to
accommodate
you. I'm not down with the bullet in the head thing, but if you want Scott or Doug to do it, let me know.
Well, just send us, fire an email.
I'll help them.
I'd like to hear from you guys.
And I said this to James, I just have to say it. Giorgio, you're hot.
Oh.
Wow. Thank you very much.
Well,
thank you very much. I'm blushing now.
We'll end on that note. This has been Ghostly Talk. I have been Scott L.
I'm still Bonnie.
I'm Amber.
Why don't you see your Doug?
I'm Doug.
See you guys next week.